Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Ah, I love that sound. Sounds like spring.
Very nice.
Very nice, I know. It's bird news today with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Can we just kind of keep that going through the whole hour behind us? All right, so Snowy Owl, look at this front page of the Falmouth Enterprise. There he is.
He's famous, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Because it just was not a snowy owl year.
I know. You know what's a weird, too? I saw on Facebook that somebody had seen an owl. This is before the pictures came, and I thought, what did they really see?
Yeah.
And then the pictures came, and you went, whoa, it really is a snowy owl.
Right. You're right to be skeptical of things on Facebook, but increasingly, that's how we found out about birds, especially this spring.
Yeah.
And just more and more, that's how people are communicating about stuff, and there's so many groups out there, and that's how I learned about it. But yeah, there were almost none. I mean, even in the places that it really are a gimme for a snowy owl, say on the Christmas counts back in December, Nauset Beach, Sandy Neck, they just weren't getting them. And there were a couple. I mean, there were snowy owls seen on Nauset Beach and Sandy Neck here and there, but not reliably like in a typical year. So this was a well below average year, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
And this owl ended up having an interesting story.
It does. It has a really interesting story.
Right. And so a local photographer, Kevin Friel, I think his name is, sort of figured out that this owl looked familiar. He was photographing this Falmouth owl, which is just sitting on rooftops.
Yeah.
You know.
Right down the street from me.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool neighborhood bird. It's very accommodating and very, very much posing for photographers. And he's looking at these photos and he's like, wait a minute. It turns out this is the same bird that had spent the winter at Satuest Point in Rhode Island, which is, it's a well-known birding spot. A lot of people go there. We ran a trip there from Wellfleet Bay at one point this winter. And snowy owls and harlequin ducks and things like that are why people go. It's a great winter birding spot. But that was one of the only reliable snowy owls in the whole region, really, in New England.
And it doesn't seem to be too afraid of people, right? I mean, just hanging out, people are coming by.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's his MO, I guess. He goes where the birders will find him, and then he hangs out and poses. This is like a pet owl for birders. Very, very accommodating, which is nice.
Yeah. And I did get to see it. So I drove by this morning to see if it was still perched there on the roof. And I did not see it this morning, but I did see it two days ago. I don't know if anybody has seen it this morning. I'd love to show you where it is, Mark, after the show, but I don't know if he's still there. 866-999-4626 is our number if you want to chime in this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Well, I was really excited. Kevin was there when I showed up with my grandson and my husband, and he was taking some photos and, you know, telling us all about this owl, which was really cool. So little Jackson got to see through my binoculars the owl. And then on the same weekend, which was the weekend before this last one, we got to see some baby robins in a neighbor's yard. And, of course, you know, the robin being his best bird.
Oh,
he was more excited about the robins than the snowy owl.
I was going to ask, does he have a new favorite bird yet?
No,
or is it still the robin?
No, still the robins.
It's
and
still
he says
his
the same.
Best
we,
bird.
We drive by, we look at the ospreys on Surf Drive, and he's thinking, they're okay, but they're not robins.
he's like, meh. Yeah.
they're okay.
Good for him.
Yep. Mimi, why do you like ospreys so much?
Yeah. He's a songbird guy.
Yeah, I guess so.
I can relate to that.
So, so what this snowy owl will probably, I mean, it's been here longer than
a lot
of people thought it would be, right? Usually a few days and they're gone, but
they're just doing weird things these days. I mean, they've been oversummering. Even after years that weren't that big, there was one that summered on Monomoy. There was one that was probably summering on Great Island and Wellfleet. They've done that in the past at Logan Airport, where Norm Smith, Mass Audubon's Norm Smith, has studied them for like 40 years plus probably at this point. But it's very, very unusual for one to be here past March, really.
Right.
I mean, this is not it's not an expected bird in April, never mind May. And so who knows what this bird will do? There's no, it can't do anything if it goes back to the Arctic. It can't breed. At this point, I don't think it could get back to the Arctic, find a mate, establish a territory, and breed in the short Arctic summer. It, maybe and, it could if it re- if it really hightailed it.
And
but
maybe
I don't
it
think
knows
so.
That and says, "Huh, why should I? Well, maybe I'm going to hang around here for a little while." And they named him Felix. I'm not sure. Felix and Fritzy, I think, are the two names that I've seen for this bird.
Who's they? Who's the self-appointed nomenclature committee? I wasn't on it.
Yeah, no, you weren't. I guess it had spent some time in a rehabilitation center in Canada and had been hit by a car. And
okay.
and then release. And so to tell me the blue dots.
Jeez, I haven't even caught up to the rest of this bird's backstory.
You got
to
read this story in the Falmouth Enterprise. Tell me about the blue dots. What are the is that a banding thing that they do? What are the blue dots that it has under his wings?
I don't even know.
Oh, you don't
I mean,
know?
Geez,
okay.
I haven't I've got egg in my face here. I haven't caught up. The Falmouth
I don't
Enterprise
think it
has all the
it doesn't
the birding
it doesn't
news.
Talk about what the blue dots are, you know, what that the meaning is or what they use that for. I thought maybe you would know that.
Well, some people use paint. Norm Smith used to put paint on the back of their heads. And so these birds would suddenly show up on Duxbury Beach with a blue dot on the back of the head, and you know that that had just come from Logan Airport. So I don't know. I mean, different. There's lots of different people studying lots of different birds and using different marking techniques. I suppose somebody could have been doing some kind of under-the-wing paint marking. That is pretty challenging to see in the field. I don't know why you would do that unless you were pretty confident you could see them fly.
Yeah.
Huh. But who knows?
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. So this is not the only unusual bird hanging around. Lots of southern birds, rare southern birds across the region.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rare southern birds, rare northern birds. It's another weird spring. So, I mean, way back in the beginning of April, we had this weather pattern where we had these southerlies for several days. And I think what must have happened is this phenomenon where, so migrants are coming north this, at that time of year, but they're mostly south of us, right? They're still in the Caribbean and Florida, but they're making their way north, towards the mainland U.S. And sometimes they might get caught out over the water, you know, maybe they're heading from Cuba to Florida or Cuba to South Carolina or whatever, and they get caught out over the ocean. And these strong southerly winds bring them much further north than they intended to go. We call this overshoot migration.
Mm-hmm.
And so a hooded warbler or a prothonotary warbler that breeds in the southeastern U.S. was trying to get to the Carolinas or Virginia or something, and they end up in Nova Scotia or Cape Cod because we stick out into the ocean and tend to catch these kind of wayward birds. And so these extended southerly winds just turned into the gift that kept on giving for birders. I mean, we're still discovering southern rarities that have just been around and maybe just haven't turned up yet. Like on Friday, a prothonotary warbler turned up at a feeder in Provincetown. And we, you know, those winds were a long time ago. I suppose it could have shown up since then. But and there's just a ton of these things out there, these kind of southern treats that we don't usually get to see. And seeing Jenny just now remind me, she said that they just had an indigo bunting. And that's been one of the birds that has defined this kind of influx of southern birds. Like, they breed up here, but they showed up way earlier. So I think they were part of this group of birds that were in the Caribbean region and got caught up in some southerly winds and ended up here either further north than they should be or way ahead of schedule in the case of these indigo buntings. And so people have been emailing and calling, "I have indigo buntings in on my deck. I've never seen an indigo." And that's exactly
they're
what
so
Jenny
pretty
just said.
Too,
I've
yeah.
never seen one. I haven't had one in my yard, but everyone else in the world apparently has had an indigo bunting in their yard this spring because of this unusual weather pattern.
I haven't had one.
Yeah, oh, good. All right.
I'm in the same boat as you.
Yeah. Other things like hooded warbler, I mentioned, prothonotary warbler, a lot of yellow-throated warblers, and all southeastern breeding birds. And the maybe the craziest one yet, no, that's not true. I'll get to the craziest one. But on Birdathon, on Saturday, somebody found a painted bunting, which is very rare in spring.
Mm.
They turn up in the fall for some reason up here, well north of their breeding range, but not in the spring so much. I don't know why, but somebody found a painted bunting in Truro, in this little kind of obscure neighborhood birding spot. And that was very, very unusual. That was just on Saturday. And so there's still more stuff to be found out there. If people look, and you don't have to go to the beech forest or, you know, the real hot spots that all the birders are in. You really just, your neighborhood could be hosting one of these things.
It's been hopping in my backyard, too. It's like, I don't need, as you know, I have to stop feeding the birds because of the rats. But I have you know, my bird baths and my hummingbird feeder, and there's been a lot of activity in my yard.
Yeah. Well, it's
just
that time of year.
I saw a couple of Baltimore Orioles on my apple trees.
And everyone loves when their Orioles come back.
Yeah.
And when the Orioles come back, you put out your jelly feeder, right?
And I haven't done that yet.
Well, I haven't either. So my Oriole took matters into his own hands has been going to the hummingbird feeder.
Yeah.
But people put out their jelly feeders, and because of the way the migration has been this year, they're getting summer tanagers and scarlet tanagers coming to their jelly feeder. And summer tanager is a rare bird.
Yeah.
Very nice. I love the Oriole song.
Yeah. They're so pretty, too.
Yeah. It's a happy tune.
I will
it's like a
say
major
that,
key, happy little tune. Yeah.
Jackson was very impressed with the male Baltimore Oriole because it looked like a robin.
Jeez.
It's red like a robin.
Kid's getting to be a one-note symphony. It's these other birds out there, Jackson.
I know, he does. Let's talk to Ed, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Ed.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great.
Morning.
Good. Well, you can add me to the list of people that have had the indigo bunting in their backyard.
For crying out loud.
Lucky you.
we saw it last week. I got a couple of good pictures before I scared it off. But the question I had today was, I think I have an eastern towhee in the backyard. I've seen it the last couple of days. Would that be something that we would be seeing this time of year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I get them, and they're pretty common on the Cape still. We have the right habitat for them. Overall, range-wide, they're considered a, quote, declining shrubland bird. They like regenerating oak forest, so, you know, young oaks, shrubby oaks, and we still, because of the way we manage land on the Cape, even with all the development, we still have a lot of that kind of habitat, oaky woods with an oaky understory. And so that's a backyard bird. It's in Harwich, where you are. What part of Harwich are you in?
We're right on Great Western Road. If you were going eastbound, it's just before you would turn onto right before it turns into Main Street.
Yeah, it's kind of the industrial. So yeah, they're everywhere, and that just goes to show you. I mean, I'm in a more wooded part, and I get them, but they really are. We do well with towhees, and it's such a nice, it's such a gorgeous bird.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, that kind of tri-colored combination. Yeah, the red eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been hanging out under the feeder and, I don't know, just catching whatever's on the ground or looking for worms, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, right. And we're lucky to have so many of them on the Cape. Such a great bird. Yeah.
Ed, thanks for sharing.
Well, thank you. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. If you have a bird question or story for us, we'd love to hear it. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So I saw this bright yellow. At first, I thought goldfinch standing on top of my hummingbird feeder. And I thought, couldn't be that yellow this time of year, could it? So I sent you a little note. Is it a warbler? And so it was a goldfinch.
Yeah. Oh, they're bright.
They're so bright.
Yeah. And it's shocking. You, like you were saying, you're used to seeing them all winter where they're just sort
they're
of
drab.
This drab little bird. And they confuse people in the winter.
They
what is that?
Yeah,
it's happened
that
at the sanctuary. Even like staff people like, what is that thing? But now they're just like, they just pop.
But it seems
like
overnight. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't overnight, but it seems like it. Right.
It does seem like it's overnight, and then they're just so shockingly yellow, and with that nice contrasty, the black little cap. They're just smart-looking little birds.
Yes, they are smart-looking. That's a good way to describe them. So, speaking of warblers, there are some walks happening, right, in Provincetown. This is a good time of year to see them in Provincetown?
Yes. I mean, everybody, birders all go to the beech forest, even if they live very far away. It's sort of at the ends of the earth, and that's one of the reasons it's so good. It's part of the Cape Cod National Seashore in Provincetown. We got a warbler. What do we got?
Dan's working hard there to get these sounds. Yellow warbler.
That's fun. Yeah, that yellow warbler, if it was that, was doing an alternative song that sounded like a chestnut-sided warbler. That would be one where I would have to look at the bird.
Testing you.
Right. So warblers are tough because they have A, B, and sometimes A1 and B1 song types.
Yeah, wow.
So it's not just like you have to learn the one song of the yellow warbler. Yeah. They might have several, and they can sound like each other sometimes. But so the beech forest, B-E-E-C-H, like the tree, because it is to some degree a mature forest and a little bit of a window into the past forest, the pre-colonial forest of the Cape, which, you know, beeches and oaks and hickories.
They like that.
Oh, yeah, of course. You're coming in off the water, off the cold ocean, and you've got these kind of swampy woods just starting to leaf out, and the caterpillars are coming out, and, you know, there's sunny spots in there, and it's nestled in the dunes. So it's this oasis, and, you know, a nice trail system and parking lot and all that. And so the birders and the birds collect there. And, of course, you can still do your thing where the chickadees land on your hand. This is the place where the chickadees land on you. And locals, to the chagrin of the Park Service, keep, you know, bringing in bird seed. Yeah. And, you know, you get
the Cape Cod Bird Club is doing some walks, right?
And yeah, I'm getting there. Yeah. I'm taking the scenic route. We have calls. Look at the phones are working for once.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. I'm starting to worry about our phones.
Yeah.
typically, our phones have the reliability of two cans on a string when I'm on. I don't know what happens. But anyway, so yes, the Cape Cod Bird Club has traditionally for years run these weekend trips in May where a leader will be there. This year they're at 7 a.m.
Gotta get there
ambitious.
Early.
They used to be at 8 a.m. And it doesn't, you can, you know, there's warbler activity throughout the morning, but starting early is good. And so 7 a.m. Saturdays and Sundays, if you go to the beach forest, check the bird club website.
Just to make sure.
And get the leader's contact info in case there's bad weather or something like that. But otherwise, you can just go there anyway.
Yeah.
And bird around. And I'm leading one on the 25th. It's I believe that's Saturday, May 25th. I'll be
I'd have to get up really early.
Yeah. It's the sun's it's light enough to bird at like 5.
Oh, that's not happening for me. Yeah. All right, let's talk to Elizabeth, who's calling from Middletown, Rhode Island. Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you?
Good.
Morning.
I am. How are you? I'm enjoying the show. I just tuned in. Just after you started, or just before you started talking about the snowy owl that you have been enjoying for about how long has he been in your area?
More than a week.
More than a week?
Yeah, more than a week. A little more than a week, yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, I live in Middletown, and I, after dropping my son at school every morning, it has been my habit to drive up to the Statuist Point National Wildlife Refuge. Which is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Quinnick Island coastline, but Statuist Point is a lovely resource here. And we believe very strongly that your, is it Fritz?
Well,
he's our snowy.
Yeah, they're calling him Felix. And yes, they have confirmed it is the same owl that you were seeing there.
It's the same owl.
Yeah, yep.
And he has been here, he was here, beginning in late November, I went away the second week of April and found out from my sources who come here also that Snowy flew the coop, so to speak, while I was away. And I was thrilled to receive a message from a friend who must have seen a write-up about Snowy.
Yes.
That you guys have the pleasure now of enjoying him, but very odd. I had heard that they only stick around until late March at the very latest. So we were waiting and waiting for him to depart. He kind of tricked us a bit. He was away for about 3 days right towards the end of March, and we thought, oh, he's gone. But then he came back for another couple of weeks.
Yeah, you just don't know what he's going to do, do you? Yeah, he's
unusual. But he's quite a celebrity, and I'm very happy to hear that he is alive and well and that others are having the opportunity to enjoy him because he's a really cool guy.
Yeah, Elizabeth, thanks for calling and sharing that. And matter of fact, a couple of the photographers who've been taking the photos of there were traveling in the cold winter weather to see this owl in Rhode Island and was thinking, gee, if I knew it was going to come to Falmouth, I wouldn't have had to freeze, right?
And thank you, Elizabeth. I like your name, Fritz. Yeah. For some reason, people are calling it Felix or Fitzy. I don't know. Yeah. That's a very Massachusetts name. Hey, Fitzy. But I like Fritz. Fritz was the joke name we were giving for our son before he was born. We're telling everybody his name was
going to
be Fritz, and it kind of grew on us.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Kenny calling from Chatham. Hi, Kenny.
Good morning. I have a quick question for Mark. I've seen a lot of dead loons on the beaches around Chatham and North Beach this winter, and really unusually high amount of them. And,
yes.
They're all up high on the rack line or above, and I was wondering if anybody knew what's going on about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
we love the sound.
Thanks for calling, Kenny. Kenny's a birding boat captain in Chatham. He takes out birding trips. And I don't know, can you get out of that harbor anymore? Or
how's it going to be?
Yeah, we'll find. Chatham Harbor's tough these days. Yeah, right. Just high tide only. So yeah, I've noticed that, and I've been getting a lot of reports. The kind of analysis of these die-off events tends to take a long time. The labs that do them tend to be backed up, and I haven't heard. I don't know if Stephanie Ellis is listening or if there's someone else who has some insight into whether any results came in from Tufts. It's often Tufts University that is looking at some of these birds, maybe Andrew Bogomoni, I don't know, more locally here. And I don't know if any of those folks are listening and have any results, but we have a lot of loons in general, and every year there seems to be a different suite of birds that ends up dead on the beaches more than usual. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This year it was razorbills. Every beach I go to on the Bayside when I'm monitoring piping plovers, there's a minimum of one dead razorbill.
Hmm.
And other years, in recent years, it's been thick-billed murre. And I don't know why. Thick-billed murre is not a common bird, but for some reason they were ending up dead on the Bayside beaches. And, you know, the good news is that we have tens of thousands of loons that come through here in migration, red-throated loons, common loons winter here and pass through. So there's a lot of loons out there. And so when you have a handful dead on the beach, it's not, you know, necessarily a significant thing. It's just maybe just reflecting that we have a lot of loons, and then maybe some of the young ones didn't do well and ending up dead on beaches. I mean, some of it is just kind of normal background level mortality of young birds who have a hard time finding food. And this is true of any bird population. Mm. There are some estimates that like 80% of birds don't make it through their first year, depending on the species you're looking at. And so there is just a lot of death. And so it could just be a normal level of mortality, but it's always worth looking into in case there's something going on, you know, whether it's red tide or toxins or plastics or things like that, all things that we should be concerned about and that can be suspects.
Yeah. Kenny, thanks for calling with that question. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You mentioned the piping plovers. When do you start monitoring that? Are they?
Yeah, well, they start showing up. They're part of the mid-March duo. So by, you know, St. Patrick's Day, you start looking for your first ospreys and your first piping plovers. They're nesting by the third week in April. And so, you know, we like to have fencing up in places where we know they nest by, you know, early April. But yeah, they're already on eggs. Every plover nest right now would be at the egg stage, too early for chicks. But so they're just getting started. And if the nests don't get predated, if they don't get eaten by crows and foxes, coyotes, then the chicks could be fledged by beach season, by July 4th, when the masses really come down. And that's what the beach managers all want.
Yeah.
But, you know, you start losing that first round of nests. I mean, we've lost some to crows. Mm. So far, it seems to be crows that's been our worst predator in recent years. When the fox population bounces back, they'll get back to being one of the main predators. Yeah. But they just sort of trade off with the crows, who gets to eat the plover nests.
We have some fox here down in Motul. You know, last year we had right around the corner, a fox had some kits and another one. So we've got a little bit of an increase in the fox population down here. And I think anybody like Jenny who has chickens don't have many chickens anymore.
Right. Yeah, they're tough. Yeah. they're hard on chickens. They're hard on plovers. I love foxes.
Yeah. They're beautiful.
But I'm happy that the population has come down a bit. It was just there were so many like 3-4 years ago. Yeah. Unbelievable numbers where I am out on the Outer Cape, and they were just hammering the plovers. And you know, it's mange that has knocked them back.
Yeah.
And with mammals, it's generally disease cycles that tend to cause
the population down,
the fluctuations.
Yeah.
And so maybe you're in like a little mange-free pocket, or there you have stronger foxes or something down here. But, yeah.
And they're not afraid. Let me tell you, they'll walk right by you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis is calling from Provincetown. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Mindy. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Speaking of warblers, on a whale watch, along with the a few beginning shearwaters, Jaegers, etc., we brought back to Provincetown a black and white warbler that landed on the boat, crawled under a bench, and took the ride into town.
Oh, nice.
We've also had yellow-romped, some kind of thrush I couldn't identify, and for the first time, I've probably seen a dozen species out there of passerines. A brown creeper landed on somebody's back.
Wow!
Oh, that's great. It's it's creepy.
Is great, but
yeah, he's really creeping.
It's also, you feel a little concerned for the birds because they're out there. They seem to be lost, and I know the gulls pick off. I've seen the gulls pick off a few of them.
Yeah.
So it's another hazard of migration.
It's all part of migration. I know. Yeah. It's the gulls get them. The falcons are following them along the coast, and peregrines are very good at, with their eyesight that we can't even imagine how good it is. They can spot a warbler hundreds of yards out, half a mile out, maybe more, out over the water, and they hang around, you know, cliffs and coastal points, and then they fly out over the water and they grab these tired migrants that are coming in. They love to pick off flickers too.
Oh, wow.
But all these birds are moving, and yeah, it's hazardous moving along the coast. And so thank you. Thank you for providing an Uber service to migrating birds trying to get in off the ocean. That's great.
Yeah, we do what we can.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Peter is calling from Marion. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
Yes. This is a kind of an owl update on the snowies. In Marion, we have a golf course, Catansett, which is out on the point, and saw a snowy owl there in March.
Mm. Very good.
We were also at Satu West and saw your Satu West owl, and it actually caught voles, and it was roosting on the visitor center. So
yeah.
It was quite a performer. But in Westport, there was also a snowy owl at Allen's Pond Audubon Center and on Gooseberry Island in Westport. So there have been snowy owls around.
Yeah, good. Sounds like the South Coast might have had more than usual.
Yeah,
that's good. Overall, it was not a, it was definitely a down year. There's always some. There's never, I don't think there's any such thing as a zero snowy owl winter for Massachusetts, but this was definitely below average. But yeah, there were some here and there. I don't think I ever caught up to one.
Yeah.
This guy better be there after your guy better show, Mindy.
We'll see
after the show.
I don't know if he's still here around or not. But yeah, I keep thinking he's gone, and then I drive by and there he is again. So who knows? Yeah. Well, Peter, thanks for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks, Peter.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Hummingbirds are back. Lots of people saying this.
Hummingbirds are back, yeah. So the first one I knew about, at least in this region, there was a Plymouth record on April 16th. So I always tell people to put up your feeders, you know, tax day, April 15th. There's two things you have to remember on that day. But you're not that likely to get one. You're not going to have one show up on the 15th as you're hanging up your feeder. That tends to happen in May.
But you're ready.
You're ready. If you wait until May, that's the people who wait until May, they always have this, well, I hung out my feeder and the hummingbird was there waiting, or it was there within an hour. Putting it out in April is more of a hopeful practice. And you can get away with it because it's still cold then and it's not spoiling like it does in the summer. You know, you don't have to be as concerned about it growing mold and that kind of thing. You still need to be checking it. But it's just so you might be the one to get that first hummingbird.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that one on the 16th, and then there were a few sort of a mini fallout of these early scouts on the 19th of April on the Cape here. And then, you know, not much, really. So these are just, it's the first kind of trickle. and maybe you're one of the lucky ones to see them. But then by the end of April, early May, that's when they're really starting to fill in and show up in everybody's suburban yards. And it's typically the males first. I always see a male, and this is true of a lot of birds. The males that are have to establish a territory and defend it will show up earlier than the females, whether you're talking about red-winged blackbirds or hummingbirds. That's how it works. So I had this male that was around for a week probably before I saw a female. And as soon as I saw a female, he's in display mode. Mm-hmm. And he displays, there's a couple of rhododendrons in our yard where some invisible female is sitting inside there. And he's doing that crazy display flight they do, which is so fun to watch, where they start up high and they drop down and then they go up. And so they're basically describing a J. Over and over again.
Interesting.
Like, zoom, you know, they go down, zoom, and then they're changing kind of the direction they're facing as they do it. And apparently, you know, female hummingbirds find this very impressive.
Well, that's good to know, because I've seen that and I just thought they were, you know, looking for the flowers, you know.
Well, when they're doing it over and over again, that would be a little wacky. Nope, no flower here, no flower here.
I've got my hummingbird feeder out and I just moved it because I had it too close to the house. So where you're sitting, I'm like, I'm not going to even see those hummingbirds. So I moved it back a little so we'll be able to see it better. So when they show up, we're ready.
Yeah, they're good. They'll find any feeder.
Oh yeah, I always get, you know, the hummingbirds always come every. So you know, I don't know if it's the same ones that come back, but you know, maybe.
I get more enjoyment seeing them visiting flowers. I'm sure there are other people too.
We don't have too many flowers out yet.
There's obviously enough that they are fine coming back, and I'm always amazed by hummingbirds and how they can come back to cold, seemingly flowerless environments and be fine. I saw this in the Pacific Northwest when I did bird survey work there, where it was even colder and wetter, and these rufous hummingbirds would come back, and I'm looking, like, I'm doing field work, and there's nothing flowering. Like, what are these? And there's no yards where I was, and so they can do it somehow. They can do sap.
Oh.
Some hummingbirds will hang out where sap suckers have drilled sap wells. They're certainly eating insects. They can eat, you know, they're very small insects that they flycatch for. So, you know, they can do it. They're not as delicate as we think they are. But
they're feisty, too.
But I don't see them. Like, I have some flowers in my yard. People say, you know, my yard came with the old-fashioned bleeding heart, which I wouldn't grow myself. You know, it's an Asian plant, and I'm obsessed with native plants. But I've heard people say they visit these bleeding hearts.
I'll have to keep my eye on
them. I haven't seen that. Yeah. And then, you know, there's other bleeding hearts that they supposedly visit. And then columbine hasn't bloomed yet, but supposedly they visit that. But I haven't seen them show much interest. I added Virginia bluebells this year. I haven't seen them visit those. Mm-hmm. And so I'm dying to establish some native plant, an early spring bloomer, of which there aren't very many, that will interest the hummingbirds. But I think once they come back, they're like, oh, nectar? Yes, thank you.
You know, please.
We'll visit the flowers in June and July, but I'll take the nectar right now. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you've seen the snowy owl in Falmouth this morning, give us a call. Let us know he's still there. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. John is calling from the Whale Watch Boats in Hyannis. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, guys, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, that's timely.
It's been a while though. But we figured we'd touch base. Our season's gotten underway, and we just got done with the birdathon on our boat, and that was fun. The pelagic section was a lot of fun.
Birdathon. Wait a minute. Who are you birding for?
Oh, of course, Long Pasture.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. They're not one of our competitors. That's acceptable.
No, exactly. Yeah. That's it. But a good time had by all. And I just wanted to say hey, and I guess if I can gloat, I had a nice bird to add to my yard list, but not out on the water, which was a female prothonotary warbler, and that was kind of a wow.
Yeah.
And stuck around until I could get some phone calls and texts out, and then disappeared. I got a fleeting picture, but that was about all.
A one day wonder. What day was that?
Saturday.
Birdathon Day, of course it was. I like to see those photos.
No, but I was alone. I didn't have a partner, so I couldn't record it.
Oh, okay.
So all I can do is gloat over it.
Yeah.
And again, my picture was a butt shot, so you know you can't. You know.
Okay, that's an incredibly rare feeder bird. That's very lucky. What a beautiful bird they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a southern warbler that they breed in cavities. They like swamps. So it's a cavity nester of kind of southern and midwestern swamps, but not so much Massachusetts. Very cool.
That's probably why I knew it from the lowlands of Arkansas, where I lived for a couple of years. But that was it. More than anything, we just wanted to hope the sun comes out. It's been a very crazy start to the whale season for us, because the water, and everyone's been noting it, from the shell fishermen in Barnstable Harbor to us on the whale watch boat. We look down and we can see into the water.
Yeah.
It's really still very clear. That big plankton bloom that we count on every year, you know, just boom, and all of a sudden you can't see more than 2 feet, hasn't really happened, hugely yet. So waiting for that to happen, and then hopefully the whales will sort themselves out, and we'll get going with the season.
Yeah, well, that's not good for the right whales if there's no plankton. Yeah,
exactly. All right, John, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for checking
in
with
us.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Yep. We'll see you. Yep. Bye-bye.
We have a nice photo here from Wayne Smith. He says, "My little pals." Beautiful photo.
Yeah, this is a spectacular photo of a male hummingbird. It's not easy to get a photo of a hummingbird in flight. You know, you could get photos of them when they're sitting on your feeder, but that's not as fun. But yeah, that was a really nice photo. Everybody see that? Oh, no, it's just radio. Sorry.
We'll give it to Jenny. Maybe she can put it up.
Yeah, put it online. Yeah.
All right, so Mary just wrote, and I was going to mention this. All right, so Mary says, "I wrote in March about the lonely osprey on a Gifford Street power pole. A week or so later, he was chased away by a new pair who built a beautiful new nest. Sadly, it began to smolder in early May and had to be removed. Happily, a new pole and platform have been installed in the John Wesley Church parking lot. Many thanks to all who made it happen." A little bit of controversy there, just like the pole one that was taken down, was that Dennis or Brewster? And they built the new platform. Same thing happened here. They were like, they were kind of reluctant to do it, but then...
There's a lot of this. And
I'm
constantly dealing with Eversource on this and trying to spur them along. Whatever the issue is, sometimes it's very strange to me how they're responding. So I was working with somebody recently on a nest in Yarmouth that has been on the same power pole for 4 years or something like that. It has caught fire in 3 of those years. And Eversource has still not given them a safe alternative place to nest or put insulators on the wires or done any of the logical things that you would do when a pole is catching on fire and your customers are losing power and it's not good for the birds and it's not good for the people. And they're based out of Yarmouth, I think, a lot of the crews. So that one was puzzling. And so we're just kind of doing these nest by nest, trying to get these figured out. It's not a problem that's going away. I mean, the population is still increasing. I have a project where I call it the Cape Cod Osprey Project, and volunteers send me data on their nests. And basically, how many is the nest active? Were they incubating? And then how many chicks fledge? Mm-hmm. And that's the main data I'm after. And we're still on the upward growth curve for the Cape Cod population, as many as there already are. And so this is a problem that will continue. We've trained them. They're very happy to nest on human structures, and sometimes that's not safe. And we need to work with them and their biology and understand that they're going to keep coming back to that spot.
Right.
Even if you put up one of those half culverts, and then there's still going to be sticks falling on the wire. You have to do more than that.
Right.
And they don't often do more than that unless they're spurred by public outcry or,
Yeah. So this one that they just put up, I think it, like, just in the last few days, is it too late for the nest? I mean, will they build the nest now?
Oh, it's way too late. Yeah.
So they're hanging out there, but they probably won't.
So they have a really long nesting cycle, like a lot of big birds. They have to start early. Mm. And if anything happens, they don't get a second chance. They can't, build another nest in May. That they have to, basically, they're done for the year.
So what will they do? Just hang out on that platform?
They'll do any number of things. They might just kind of hang around the area if the fishing is good and keep defending that site, so other birds don't set up shop, or they'll move back and forth. Rob Beauregard is a researcher who's had a long association with the Martha's Vineyard osprey population and with satellite tracking ospreys. He's done a lot of cool work on that. And there was a bird, I think it was an adult male, that he satellite tagged that had a failed nest, and it was commuting back and forth between Martha's Vineyard and Connecticut.
Hmm.
After its nest failed, and the idea was it was going, the thought was that it had encountered that reservoir in Connecticut on migration, maybe when it was a young bird. The young birds kind of wander around. And so it was going there for good fishing and then coming back to defend its nest site. But pretty strange behavior when you think about it. We've seen other males with failed nests, like on the islands, like on, there was one on Nantucket, who then came over to the Cape and just wandered around, and I'm sure was just terrorizing these other nesting pairs. And so if you're watching a nest and you see a third bird show up and the resident pairs are making lots of noise and they're irritated, it could either be a young bird who doesn't have a nest, or it's one of these failed breeders who is just sort of doomed to wander around and cause trouble in other territories.
Mm. Let's talk to Genevieve and Martin in Provincetown. Good morning.
It's actually Genevieve Martin.
Okay, it says and.
Yes.
Hi.
Genevieve Martin.
Genevieve. And I knew that too. I got all focused on the mistake on the last name. But I know Genevieve.
Okay, hi.
Hello, Mark. I have had the proto notary.
I know. Why didn't you tell me before Birdathon? I heard about it yesterday, for crying out loud.
I knew it was rare, but I'm not a birder like
I know,
you are.
I know.
And in fact, I have a friend, Ross, who said, when I told him he did not believe me, he told his wife, oh, she must be dreaming. And then I had Scott Landry come over, and he's a good witness, and he took a picture.
I know, he's so the one who told me. That's an awesome bird.
It's the fourth day, and it's still here this morning.
Oh, it's still there. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, so this is, again, this is one of those southern birds, and they could turn up anywhere. They could turn up at your feeder. And so what is it doing when it comes to the feeders?
It eats the orange only. It doesn't touch the jam. He's in the orange constantly.
Yeah.
And I had an indigo bunting for 4 days as well.
Oh.
And I have an orchard female oriole that comes all the time. It's here constantly. And I had a red-breasted grosbeak as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the rose-breasted grosbeak. Wow, you've got all the cool birds, and there's been a lot of all of these things around.
You know, you live in town, you get more birds sometimes.
Oh, I mean, Provincetown is just such a target for these migrants that they don't just go to the beach forest. They'll happily end up in a sunny little neighborhood with lots of plantings and orange feeders. Yeah, Prothonotary warbler is one of the few warblers that you'll see visiting feeders in the tropics where they winter. I've seen them. I have pictures of a Prothonotary warbler coming to fruit feeders in Belize.
Wow.
But it's not normal for warblers to come to feeders, but they are one that will. And so people should keep an eye out for a bright yellow bird with kind of bluish-gray wings and white undertail coverts.
Yeah.
And the females are not as yellow as the males, but just gorgeous birds. Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. All right. Henry on Martha's Vineyard writes, early last summer, my wife and I were walking by an unknown bird singing on the branches just outside of our bedroom window. They gradually became increasingly annoying to the point where I set out to find out which bird was making all the noise. I took this shot from my back porch and immediately my annoyance subsided. Truly a beautiful little bird. And he sent a picture of a towhee here, right?
Yeah. Beautiful male towhee.
Yeah. They're so pretty.
Oh, they're good singers. They are lusty singers this time of year. It's not the most, you know, drink your tea.
Yeah.
Drink your tea over and over again. But it's a great spring Cape Cod sound.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about the Birdathon keeps coming up this hour. So for folks who don't know what the Birdathon is, tell us about the Birdathon. What is that?
It's madness. It's absolute madness. It's a big annual fundraiser. We've certainly talked about it here before, but it's Mass Audubon's big spring fundraiser that's centered around a birding competition among the sanctuaries. So Mass Audubon has this big network of sanctuaries. There's our towhee drinking his tea. All the British naturalists that named all the birds and came up with all the mnemonics. They all involve tea. and so every sanctuary at Mass Audubon can field a team and compete for two things. One is raising the most money, which is certainly the most important thing to support all the work that we do. But there's also the birding component, and it is a birding competition. And so it's there's a cup. There's an actual trophy.
Oh, a trophy. Wow.
And then there's the Brewster Cup, and then there's a second-place trophy. And it's just bragging rights among the sanctuaries, you know, to see the most birds. Mm-hmm. And I've never won it. I've second place a couple times where we won the Forbush Cup.
So we'll know later this week.
But boy, I'm just learning how tough it is to field the team. I mean, people have lives. And, you know, I have
things to do.
I've got some of the best birders in the eastern U.S. on my team, but they have lives. They have children and they're coaching and they have graduation parties and they're out of state and all this. And this Moose Hill Sanctuary has just been eating my lunch the last couple of years. I mean, there's like an evil genius in charge of that team, Vin Zolo. And I picture him like spinning around in a chair, stroking a cat. So you think you can win Birdathon this year? And he's been stealing my birders. It is cutthroat.
Oh, it is cutthroat. So we'll know what results are in tomorrow. We'll know who won.
But I still had a good team out there. I had good coverage. And we'll know tomorrow. No, I don't even know how many birds my team had. I haven't had time to look at all the results from my sub-teams. I will know by the end of day tomorrow, and then headquarters has to do all the tabulation, and within a couple of weeks, we'll know who won won Birdathon.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you. Debbie's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Hey, Debbie.
What's going on?
How
are you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a question. You may have covered this already. I just tuned in. I have a crazy robin that is flinging itself against my window, and it's going to hurt itself, but it keeps doing it days and days and days after.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a guy. We've got a robin guy. we're gonna send him down. Where are you? Jackson is going to come down. That's his best bird, and he's gonna figure it out. So robins are one of the birds that do this. Cardinals. These are the repeat offenders, and they're all hormoned up. It's breeding season.
Okay.
It's well into breeding season for robins, and they're just crazy. And so they see their reflections, and they attack it. And what did you say yours was? A window or a car?
Yeah,
my
kitchen window.
Your kitchen window?
Just, you know, north facing, and he's just flinging himself against it.
Yeah, they're not the smartest. So they're, you know, like any young male in the season of love trying to impress a female, they're not too bright. And so some kind of a physical barrier is the solution. They'll stop doing it eventually, but if you're really concerned about them hurting themselves, then you might have to tack up a little bit of bird netting or, I don't know, soap the windows or do something temporarily so he's not seeing his reflection anymore. Is really the only.
Much. That's interesting.
They don't respond to counseling or being spoken to. So you have to put up a physical barrier.
Yeah. So he sees it's just him. All right. Thanks for the call, Debbie. Appreciate
that. Thank you very much. Bye.
Sure. So if that owl is still around, so what is he eating?
What I was going to ask. Yeah. Somebody was saying rabbits. I mean, the snowy owls in New England along the coast tend to eat a lot of ducks. Mm. And so people might think they know what it's eating, but they're probably still hunting at night. I guess what I mean is people think that these owls are active during the day because you see them during the day, but they're really just sitting around mm-hmm. for the most part. And at night, they turn into a different creature. Mm. They're shaped differently at night. Like they become alert, and their neck goes up, and their head looks different, and they have these little ears, and they go into hunting mode. So like every other owl, they're still more active hunting kind of like early in the night and then towards morning. And they will go out at night and they will pick ducks off the water and take them in and eat them.
Wow.
Not all, but, you know, they eat anything.
Yeah.
This is a big predatory bird. And
so
like pretty much all big predatory birds, except for ospreys, they eat everything that moves.
Okay.
They'll eat a great blue heron if they can catch one.
Wow.
They'll eat lots of mammals and voles, rabbits,
so
rats,
there's plenty of food around
gulls.
for our snowy owl.
Anything, yes.
All right. Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, joins us the second Tuesday of every month. Thanks, Mark. See you next month.
Well, that was quick. See you next time.
Okay. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.